Hi, welcome to Conversations on Public Health. I'm your host, Prachi. Join me every week as I travel across India, speaking to folks who are solving massive public health challenges facing our country and the larger developing world. Hi, Venki. How are you doing? A very welcome to our show.
Thank you, Prachi. It's a pleasure talking to you and being part of your podcast. I'm a big fan of your podcast and they're really amazing.
Wonderful. So I'll just dive in, right? Cancer is such a powerful word in our collective psyche, right? Nearly all of us know someone who has suffered because of it or fought it. And as a doctor, you treat this malady day in and day out. And I'm sure you have experienced and played a part in many such stories.
Yeah, sometimes it gets tough when you see people suffering all around you, especially children, you know.
Right.
You don't expect a nice, bubbly two-year-old to be told that he or she has cancer, and it's very traumatic for the child as well as the parents. But I always keep on thinking to myself, somebody has to do this job, you know. Somebody has to make them feel better. Somebody has to give them hope, huh? And why can't I be that somebody?
So tell us about some of these stories that you've seen on ground. Was there any kind of personal experience that really got you into this field? Or what have been some powerful stories or experiences that have stayed with you, you know, in the course of this extremely challenging career?
There have been various life-altering stories. The most important one I can remember is, you know, when I was undergoing my training. And there was this young girl who had a highly curable cancer. She was 10 years old, and she was from rural India in the north. Her dad didn't want her to get treated. We told that, you know, we can treat the child for free. We would give accommodation, we would get food, and she would get completely cured. But he was adamant that, no, my daughter has cancer, and it is a death sentence. And even if she's cured, the stigma is going to stick with her, and nobody is going to marry her. And that kind of affected me a lot, you know. First of all, there's always been a gender bias in our country. And this was, you know, denying somebody a chance to get cured, a curable cancer, and be a productive member of the society. And I've seen extremes also. I've seen people, you know, begging and pleading with me because they are unable to afford treatments that cost lakhs or crores or rupees, which no middle class or even rich people in India can afford, but they are desperate just to get that extra 1 or 2 months or 3 months of survival to be with their loved ones. So yeah, every day is a learning experience. There are, you know, thousands of stories all around me.
I'm sure that affects your mental health at a very different level.
It does, but it also it also makes me determined to do something for them. You know, I take it as a motivation to, you know, try to see at my level to see what I can do to help them and what I can do to make the system better. So I tend to take it in a positive way because that's my job. My job is to help people with cancer.
So the stories you mentioned, they seem like stories that a lot of us have heard.
Yes.
Or would imagine is the case, right? Yes. People not having enough money to treat their cancers, or people losing hope, because that's probably what a lot of us have just seen growing up.
Yes.
But it doesn't really have to be the case. And the reason why we feel that way is probably because the government has not done very much to sort of like alleviate these fears, right?
Yes.
What is the state of cancer in India? You know, what's the state of cancer treatment? How is the government thinking about it? Or is the government thinking about it at all?
So, you see, worldwide, almost 12 million people are diagnosed with cancer every year. And about a million people in India are diagnosed with cancer every year. And it's expected that almost half of them would die. And the government, cancer is only one of the health problems which is facing our society.
Let me catch you right there. So you mentioned 12 million people get diagnosed with cancer and only 1 million of them are in India.
Yes.
But India forms maybe like 10 to 15% of the world's population,
yes,
right?
Yes.
So you would imagine that a lot more people probably get cancer and don't get diagnosed?
Absolutely. So many of the cancer patients don't even get a diagnosis of cancer, especially in rural India. They are treated for tuberculosis or malaria or they just die without even knowing if they have cancer. And sometimes even if they are diagnosed with cancer, they do not get access to treatment because the major cancer centers are located in metropolitan cities. And each state has probably one or two at the maximum cancer centers. So if you take Maharashtra, there's Tata Memorial Hospital. If you take Uttar Pradesh, there's SGPGI, Lucknow. So, and some of these hospitals are like thousands of kilometers from where these people stay. So the mere fact that to access care needs means traveling a lot and spending money, many people just give up hope and don't want to get treated or go for you know, some other traditional medicine or native medicine to help them out.
So then cancer really is a death sentence for a lot of Indians today.
It doesn't need to be a death sentence. What I'm telling is that it is not a death sentence because of the disease. It is a death sentence in term because they don't have access to care. Okay, and if we are able to provide access to good cancer care, that is, cancer care is multimodality. So you have chemotherapy, you have surgery and radiotherapy, at least at the district level. At least district hospitals, if they start providing cancer care, you can have a significant proportion of patients who can be saved and who can have, you know, who can live long lives. And even if you can't save them, at least you can provide them comfort care and palliative care and pain care. So currently, the government is having an ambitious plan to bring cancer care at the district level, but it needs a lot of investment in terms of manpower and infrastructure. But the ideal world would be that every district in India has its own multi-specialty cancer hospital which caters to its population. If it's a big district, you might need to have two or three cancer hospitals.
And that is not the ground reality
now. Even the major medical colleges don't have cancer departments, some of the major medical colleges. So we can't even think of district level if we are not able to provide cancer services in medical colleges. And this is especially true in the northern and eastern part of the country. The situation is better in at least in the southern states where people have better access to cancer care in the public health system, but not so in the northern and eastern states.
Let's think of it as a patient pathway.
Yes.
Let's say I'm a rural Indian in like a back of the beyond village in a backward district in Bihar.
Yes.
What would the pathway be for me?
That's a very interesting question. So it depends on how valuable you are to the society and to the family. If you're too old or if you're too young, you might just be allowed to die because it's not probably worth the effort.
A priority.
You know, because you're already old and you're frail. But if the family decides to get you treated, usually it is somebody in the village or a relative who's gone to a big city, either Delhi or Mumbai, and got treated in one of the major cancer hospitals like All India Institute or Tata Memorial Hospital and who's got cured there. And they would direct the patient to, you know, go there. So the family, along with the patient, usually catches a train, overnight train, and ends up in, you know, Delhi or Mumbai, not knowing where they're going. And from the railway station, with difficulty, managed to reach the higher cancer center. And then go to the OPD and generally sometimes end up spending the whole few weeks, 2 months outside the footpath, outside the hospital to get good treatment. So this is the scenario in most cases. These hospitals do a terrific job. They don't send patients back. They treat them and then they refer them back to places close by where they have identified doctors, usually their own alumni, who can provide them with cancer care. So, but yeah, this is the usual journey. Even if there are cancer centers locally available, people have trust in these bigger centers and prefer to take the journey to see that their loved ones are cured. And this means loss of job, staying away from home for months, loss of livelihood, kids staying away from their parents. So it's not just the patient who's affected, it's the whole family which is affected.
Where in India do people get diagnosed with cancer? Like if I have cancer, then where will I find out that I have cancer, especially if I'm a rural person?
You see,
will it be at the AIIMS or will it be like, let's say, you know, in the state capital of whatever state I'm in?
You see, the diagnosis of cancer is not difficult. You know, cancer is part of your medical curriculum. Any qualified MBBS doctor should be able to suspect a diagnosis of cancer. And and the common symptoms of cancer are lumps and bumps and weight loss and chronic fever and bleeding in your stools. So these are common symptoms which are easily identifiable. So the first thing is to suspect cancer. Many a times what happens is that it is not suspected and patients are treated with antibiotics or painkillers. It's very common to treat tuberculosis in our patients who have tuberculosis, especially if you have lung cancer or a lymph node cancer like lymphoma, they end up getting tuberculosis. So the people keep on going to multiple doctors, there's a delay in diagnosis. So early suspicion is important. And once you suspect it early, you have to refer it to your nearest cancer center, which could be a medical college or it could be a regional cancer center. And then the diagnosis is made by the treating cancer doctor based on your scans or a biopsy or a blood picture, you know, a complete blood count. So that's left to the specialist to find out. But the referral is most important.
If I live in a small village, yes. Can I go to, let's say, a town nearby? Yes. Will that town have the diagnostic facilities for me to at least be suspected of cancer?
You have... I'll tell you something that, you know, India is a country of contrasts. So we sometimes have access to technologies even which big developed countries don't have. So every town in India now has a pathology lab or a CT scan center and, you know, a multi-specialty hospital. So at least in the private sector. So so a diagnosis of cancer can be made by a good pathologist, you know, who's trained. But that costs money. And we are talking majority of the patients in India cannot afford private sector. So if they go to the town, they would definitely go to their public hospital there. And it is for the public doctors in the public hospitals to initially diagnose and pick up the cancer and send. You don't need sophisticated equipments to diagnose most cancers. You just need a tissue diagnosis or biopsy in most cases. It's just that you need to suspect and refer fast. So yes, we have the capacity, but the capacity is more towards people who have the ability to pay.
Let's talk a little bit more about this ability to pay. I wonder, in the course of one's entire cancer treatment, where does the majority of the cost go? Is it drugs? Is it diagnosis? Or is it chemotherapy? I mean, for someone who is not very aware of the journey of cancer treatment, it would be very nice to understand where the money is going.
So you see, people have done studies, and you can divide those costs into two. One is the direct cost and other is the out-of-pocket cost. So direct costs are the costs of getting treated.
Right.
And that includes your diagnostic tests, your scans, your biopsies, your surgery, your radiation, your chemotherapy drugs. And they do cost a significant proportion of your cancer care. But about 30 to 40% of your costs are indirect, which kind of is not actually measured. It includes traveling up and down, you know, every day. Sometimes you have to catch a cab to come to the hospital. That will cost you 2,000, 3,000 rupees. And staying, you know, paying for accommodation outside, paying for the food outside, loss of income because you're not able to go and work in the field.
India is called the pharmacy of the world because we have, through innovative regulation, managed to really drive down the cost of the drugs that we supply in the country and even abroad. So I wonder, when it comes to oncology drugs, have we done enough, or you know, is more required?
We have done lots, and I'm proud that India is called the pharmacy of the world. But the thing about cancer is that what you read 1 year becomes irrelevant today because it's a rapidly progressing science. And drugs are coming out in a very fast way. And cancers which had people were surviving for 6 months are now surviving for 5 years, 6 years. So those kind of drugs are not accessible to our patients. They are out of reach because, one, because of patent laws, you cannot make generics of them. So we cannot copy those drugs. And some of these patents go for 10 years, 15 years. So they are out of reach. And there are many other drugs which are off patent but are still expensive. Some drugs still cost 20,000, 30,000 rupees, even though they are made in India and they are generics. And people do not make that much money even a year. You know, 60% of our population would probably earn less than a lakh a year. So, yes, some drugs are there. Some drugs are in the national essential medicines. But those drugs are the drugs which you would have used probably 20 years, 30 years back to treat cancers. They have been slowly being replaced or being added on by newer drugs, which we don't have, most of us don't have access to. and they are prohibitively expensive.
So basically, the markets are not catching up to
the markets can't catch up because of international patent laws and regulations. If you are the only guy selling a cancer drug and there's no competition, why would you sell it for 1,000 rupees? You would sell it for 1 lakh rupees. So we do not have access to many of the latest medicines. We have access to medicines probably which were available in the West, which are new in the West 10 years back. Those are the ones which are coming out of patent. But still, these medicines are still out of reach for many people. But because of government insurance schemes like Ayushman Bharat or state insurance schemes, these have been bought into the insurance scheme. So we are able to give them to poor patients. But if you are a middle class man, see, I always keep on telling, in India, either you have to be very poor or you have to be very rich. If you're middle class,
you know, my mother says the exact same thing.
It's because if you're rich, you can buy anything. You can go, you don't even need to buy. You can go take a flight and go to MD Anderson or Memorial Sloan Kettering and get treated. If you're poor, you get automatically enrolled in Ayushman Bharat scheme or everything. And you can get drugs which will cost you 5 lakhs. But if you do not fulfill the criteria for Ayushman Bharat, you have to sell everything to buy those drugs. So that's the disparity or inequalities or inequities I see in the society. So yes, we have made advances, but we have not reached up to the level of, you know, higher income countries. Yes, we are better than many countries in Africa and in Southeast Asia.
Mm-hmm.
But as an oncologist, I always feel that, you know, I haven't been able to give everything which is available to save a patient's life. I have just been able to give him some things. Probably if I had this patient had access to this new drug, I could have saved him or I could have prolonged his life. That is a guilt I feel. I work in a charitable hospital. My patient clientele is mostly from the lower economic strata of the society. So this is something which I juggle daily, you know. It kind of hits my moral compass, you know. Yes, this drug is available. And sometimes we do tell patients and they're like desperate. Because they know from somebody else that, you know, ask your doctor to give this drug. But they are desperate, you know, they want to sell their house, they want to sell everything, but still they can't make it and you feel guilty. And sometimes they bargain with me. They said, doctor, why don't you give a concession? Why don't you give a reduction? You know, I feel like as if I'm sitting in a grocery shop. Because I don't determine the drug prices. Right. I don't make a profit out of these drugs. This is how the drug is priced. So, you know, that kind of really makes me feel miserable sometimes. I don't want your audience to get a perception that, you know, I am celebrating that somebody should be poor, face a lot of difficulties. I'm just trying to put make a point that, you know, it affects everybody. Even the middle class, whom you think should be able to afford, when you get cancer, it can take you to bankruptcy.
Of course. Now, quickly, like to touch on oncology research. You mentioned that a lot of drugs are very expensive, but that's probably because so many foreign companies hold those patents, right?
Yes.
What is the state of publicly funded research in India when it comes to oncology, or even privately funded research? Where are we when it comes to something like that? Especially because in a country like India, which has such a huge burden of cancer patients, it should be, the default, right? It should be a no-brainer for us to invest a lot in this kind of research and drive down the cost of cancer treatment.
So, unfortunately, in terms of pharma research, our pharma companies are more comfortable in getting a medicine which is off-patent and reverse engineering and making a profit, rather than taking the risk of putting billions of dollars. To get a cancer drug in the market takes 10 years and sometimes billions of dollars. And about 1 in 10 drug would succeed. So 9 out of 10 times you would fail. For that, you need huge capital and you should be willing to take the effort to clinical trials.
Patients,
clinical trials, and it's a long time. Why wait when you can just reverse engineer a drug and make a profit? So, only way it can happen is if government incentivizes for people to invest in actually developing new drugs, setting up an R&D facility, putting in more money. In the US, it's the National Cancer Institute, NCI, and the National Institute of Health, NIH. They have a budget which runs into billions of dollars, and they actively fund research in various academic centers for new drugs, and there is collaboration between the pharma and academia. We do not have that kind of money to put in research, and you're not going to get results now. It will take at least two or three decades for that to happen. But it is the first thing is the funding, and that's where we hit a roadblock. So unfortunately, path-breaking cancer research is not happening in terms of something which is going to get you a Nobel Prize. Yeah, people are working hard in labs across the country, but to expect something which should dramatically change would need more funding. Without funding, it's difficult.
The kind of money that public institutions spend on cancer, and I'm sure they spend a substantial amount of their budgets on treating poor people with cancer. But the kind of social cost which cancer brings about, I'm sure if we could put a dollar or a rupee cost to it, it would dwarf everything that we're spending currently on it. So, I know you've spoken about it in the past. If you could sort of talk a little bit more about the social cost of cancer.
See, the social cost of cancer as such is multifactorial. Cancer can affect people in their prime of their lives, both men and women. Breast cancer and cervical cancer, we are seeing in people who are just 30, 40 years old. We are getting men with lung cancers in 40 years, 50 years. And once they get a diagnosis of cancer, they end up losing their jobs. As I said, the money and a stigma gets associated with it. They don't want to tell their family members, or they don't want to tell their relatives that they have cancer. Even when somebody brings a patient to the hospital, many a times the caregivers would come inside the room and say, "Doctor, please do not tell the patient that he has cancer." The patient can read that it is a cancer hospital. Patient can read that he's seeing a medical oncologist. Patient knows that he's getting chemotherapy. But still they would say that no, डॉक्टर मत बताइएगा, झटका लगेगा और उसी उसी में पेशेंट की जान चले जाएगी. सो यू काइंड ऑफ इवन आर अलाउड टू टेल द पेशेंट दैट इज गॉट कैंसर. सो दैट इज़ अ काइंड ऑफ सोशल स्टिग्मा विच इज़ एसोसिएटेड विद कैंसर. यंग वुमेन, यू नो, दे जस्ट कम विद लार्ज ब्रेस्ट लम्स, यू नो, एंड वी जस्ट आस्क हिम, यू नो, यू कैन सी इट, योर होल ब्रेस्ट इज अल्सरेटिंग, इट इज़ ह्यूज, इट्स ब्लीडिंग. वाई डिड यू इवन टेक सो लॉन्ग टू कम? अगेन द फियर that what will the society think, and I will lose my breast, what would my husband think, that kind of pushes them to the brink, that they wait till everything is like they reach their point of beyond the point of tolerance. I hope that's what you are trying to ask in terms of
like just the human social cost of it, how it affects
it's
people
human, it affects it affects different people in different ways, And after some time, some people really get, when we have no solutions in modern medicine, you run out of options. And then people are desperate, even very educated people are desperate for something. So then they go to alternate practitioners, they spend money there, and it's also a parallel, booming business running in India. It's not evidence-based, there's no randomized data, it's just anecdotes that, I just went to that person, he gave me this XYZ and I'm feeling better, I tried naturopathy, I tried this, I tried that diet. But none of them have been scientifically proven, because if it's proven, then we would start using that. If it's very good, why should we deny our patients? So there's a big market there. So they spend money with the normal health system, and when the normal health system doesn't work, they spend money on the parallel health system, and some of them are quacks, and because they have a belief that it might work.
So, when we talk about these patients, the patients that, modern medicine can't help any longer, when it comes to, let's say, palliative care or, end of life care, what is the state of that in India?
I would say it's pathetic, in the sense that we don't allow our people to die with dignity. Palliative care concept doesn't even exist in most places in India. Very few places in country, especially Kerala, has developed a good palliative care model. And even doctors are not able to provide proper palliative care. Palliative care doesn't mean dying. It's not that you introduce palliative care when the patient is on deathbed. Palliative care means introducing on the day you diagnose somebody with advanced cancer, and palliative care just doesn't mean that you allow somebody to die. Palliative care means providing physical, emotional, spiritual care for the patient, for pain relief.
And the family?
And the family also, yes, absolutely. It's not only the patient and the family. We have actually only one or two hospices in the country. There's no concept of hospice where people can go and die in peace. And there, I have seen so many numerous patients literally suffering in pain. Thanks to few great people in this country, we are able to at least access morphine for these patients. A drug, you know, people don't give morphine to dying patients thinking that they're going to get addicted to it. No, you're not going to get addicted. Somebody who's in his deathbed, he needs pain relief. You know, he is not going to become a morphine addict and start selling morphine. So there are so many misconceptions about palliative care in India, and there is no system of palliative care in India. And it is so disheartening to say that, as I said, 50 to 60% of people in India are going to die of cancer. So there is a huge need for having tender, loving care for our patients and having excellent palliative care services for these patients. And we also need to know when to stop unnecessarily giving medicines, doing surgery, doing radiation, when it's not going to add to a patient's life. Keep on doing things which might actually harm the patient.
Another dilemma I feel like you may be having is, like, let's say you extend a patient's life by 3 months. What is the quality of his life in those additional three months?
Absolutely right. That's why the palliative care comes in. And there is enough studies to prove that the prolonging the life by 3 months doesn't mean that the quality of life improves. So that is also something which we need to factor in when you are talking about quality of life in India. There are very few studies which look at quality of life of Indian cancer patients. And, you know, even if you wanted to do a quality of life study in India, Indians won't complain about pain. He will be suffering, but he would think that, pain is part of the disease and it's some punishment God has given him and he's supposed to tolerate. So people will not take the pain medications because they think it's better to tolerate pain rather than get side effects from the medicine. You know, so if, unlike the developed countries, just the what a quality of life means to a developed country is totally different from what a quality of life in India. We adapt to so many things. So we accept things which are actually poor quality for life, but we think that, that is acceptable. This is what life is. Ek do bar ulti ho gaya, you vomited twice, okay, that's part of the treatment. If you go west, you say, oh no, I vomited once, I can't, this is terrible. So that is also something which we need to look at, especially more the poorer you are, the more you're willing to adjust.
Put up with it or tolerate it.
Yeah, you come in the bus overnight and stand in outside the OPD queue, take a ticket, wait in the line at 6 a.m. and then you see your doctor at 5 p.m. who sees you for 2 minutes because he's seen almost 70, 80 patients today. Just for that, he's like sitting there outside in the hot sun with somebody, with his old grandmother, taking a fan and fanning him so that he doesn't feel hot. And for the 2 minutes to see the doctor saab, what quality of life is that?
So basically we've normalized like indifference.
Yes, we have normalized indifference.
Like we've just normalized their suffering. And to an extent that they have normalized their own suffering.
Yes. I would like to bring something to your podcast viewers also. Listen, we are looking at the problems in the system. The system has many positives. I don't want people to go back with the message that everything is depressing. No, everything is not depressing. Things are changing fast, things are improving. But if we don't know what the problems we have, we are not going to solve it. Okay, I have things every day, see positive things. Every day I've seen patients surviving and doing well in life. There are many positive stories, but our job is not done. We need to, make sure that everybody gets excellent care and nobody's left out.
Because the reality that you have shown me today and even the people listening to has really shocked me at least. And it makes me wonder, what can we do about it? I mean, what can I do? I can donate some money to, organizations like the ones that you work for, or talk a little bit more about cancer to people around me. But as at a policy level, what kind of things should voters be asking for from, their elected representatives?
So I would say at a policy level, first is at the prevention level, we should ban tobacco. Okay, tobacco accounts for about 30 to 35% of all cancers in India. Okay, head and neck cancers and lung cancers are tobacco associated. And these are the two major cancers along with breast cancer in our country. So at one side, you are seeing government encouraging tobacco companies because it gives them money. And it's the same tobacco which is causing cancer to the people, and the people go to hospitals and buy medicine, and that is giving them money. So I always say the winner in this tobacco and cancer battle is the government, because they get taxes from the tobacco company, and then they make taxes from the drugs and whatever whatever services you get for treatment. So it's win-win situation. So we have to stop, we have to ban tobacco. There is no two doubts about it. Yes, it makes revenue, but at what cost? At people's suffering. At the policy level, first is ban tobacco. Second thing is that, you know, strengthen your primary healthcare system. Strengthen your primary healthcare system to diagnose and refer early. You know, and to tell your ASHA workers, your PHC doctors, that, you know, don't give up on patients, have a referral pathway, and build cancer centers in existing district hospitals. Don't invest money on something new. Put in resources in a place which is already existing. You already have district hospitals, they have medicine departments. So put in manpower.
Right.
And you already have finances for them. You have the Rashtriya Aryoganithi scheme, and you have the PMJY scheme and insurance. So it's not that, you know, you're just putting the resources to get basic cancer care in district hospitals. The complicated ones can be referred. And then have your centers of higher specialties, two or three in the country. Have a cancer policy which is revised very frequently. You know, some of our cancer policy is very outdated. You're still living 20, 30 years back. Things have changed. And, you know, pediatric cancers are not even in the national cancer policy. You know, bring those things in the national cancer policy. Fourth is encourage R&D, you know, or research and development, both in public sector and private sector, for cancer research. Both clinical trials and basic sciences, put in money in that. You know, you would see the result in the future. Fifth is education and communication. Tell people that cancer is not a dreaded disease. Tell people that, you know, if picked up early, it can be cured. Sixth is start building up palliative care services and hospices across all the country. You know, people should have access to palliative care services. That is important. And seventh is regulate unscientific methods. There are people who promise that, you know, you put this magnet, you pay 5 lakh rupees and you'll get cured. Such kind of quackery should not be encouraged. Yes, if something has shown to be scientifically correct, yes, you encourage them. So I would say these are the things which are on my top priority list to influence policymakers to, you know, help cancer care. And I think one another major policy is that, like they do in UK, bulk purchase cancer drugs from multinationals for the country. Like you're having, no, like the COVID vaccine. You bulk purchase so that you drastically bring down the prices of many of the inaccessible cancer drugs. So if you're buying for the whole country, you can really negotiate with the manufacturers and then buy and let distribute it to the states and people. And so something which is costing a lakh would probably cost only 10,000 if you start buying bulk purchases. So this is also something I would... But the problem is health is a state subject, and the central government won't like to involve. But there's no harm in giving suggestions.
I have read this somewhere. I don't know if this is misinformation, but I've read that cancer is also a lifestyle disease.
Yes.
Is that true?
Yes. So as I said, 30 to 35% cancer is tobacco related, and another 30% is lifestyle related. Yeah. So basically, obesity, high fat food, lack of exercise. So these have been also implicated, and not all cancers. So one of the reasons why there's a rapid increase in breast cancer among women in India, so much so that, you know, cervical cancers has dropped in, is lifestyle related, in terms of, you know, high fat food and, you know, change in lifestyle and obesity. So, so yes, but government cannot control lifestyle. No, you, government cannot put an order that stop eating junk food or go and exercise daily. You know, you cannot bring a law. So those are things which is under an individual's control. Yes, government can send a message across, advertise that, you know, have a healthy diet, go for regular exercises. Yeah. So, but you cannot make a law. government can regulate tobacco. So that is with us. So as you said, this war cannot be fought only by the government. And then you have viruses. So you have hepatitis B virus, HPV virus. See, another thing, like cervical cancer is very common in India. Every year, we diagnose almost a lakh of women with cervical cancer. We almost 20% of world cervical cancer occurs in India. And these are women in their prime youth, in their reproductive age. Cervical cancer can be prevented with vaccination, two doses. And you can dramatically reduce the incidence of cervical cancer. So, but government hasn't got cervical cancer vaccination as a mandatory vaccination. This is something, you know.
As it should be.
Yeah, but it would cost. Because it will cost you almost 4,000 rupees or 3,000 rupees for two doses of vaccine. So this is something which government can do, you know. And then there was this controversy regarding the cervical cancer vaccine and those trials. So people became very scared and, you know, there's a misinformation about the vaccine. So that is something the government can do. You know, universal cervical vaccination for young females will dramatically reduce cervical cancers. And there are 40% of cancers are just, you know, your genetic bad luck. It's not hereditary. That those you can't control. If you're a human, you have every chance of getting developing cancer. So this 60 to 70% is in our hands. Lifestyle is in the population's hand. Your vaccination and tobacco control is in the government's hand.
Do you think there's enough public messaging for people to know that, you know, controlling cancer is indeed in their own hands to a large extent?
Yes, there is. But, you know, people like pleasures. You know, they think that it won't happen to them. Unless you have cancer, you really are not concerned whether it's going to happen at all. You're just living for that moment. Because leading a healthy lifestyle requires a lot of patience and hard work. And, you know, people only look for examples. Oh, that guy smokes 100 packs of cigarettes and he's always drunk and, you know, see, nothing happened to him. Okay, so those are the examples. They don't realize that that fellow is lucky, but there are hundreds of more people who have been doing that who have landed up with cancer. So your probability of getting cancer is more if you have a lifestyle like that. That doesn't mean it's a 100% probability. He's lucky. So that's the attitude which people have. So there is messaging, but you see all those Tata Memorial ads of people having this mouth cancer and surgery.
Yes.
I'm sure people would just mute the TV or change the channel because it doesn't affect them.
Yes.
So I think we are what the Americans and Europeans were in the late 90s and 80s and 90s. Where we had now just the economic liberalism is giving us things which we never had access to. So we want to taste all of it. It's only when the consequences of heart disease, stroke and cancer starts affecting this generation in another 10 to 20 years, then we would probably start
understand
and, you know, go back and check our lifestyle.
That was an extremely enlightening conversation.
Yeah, I enjoyed it too.
And I think all of us who've been listening to you have learned a lot. So thank you so much, Venki, for joining us for this conversation.
Yes.
And look forward to speaking to you again.
Thank you. Thanks a lot. It was a pleasure. And as I said, the job is not yet done. We have miles to go. So we keep on working. Thank you.